You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another edition of the M Squared TechCast. We are having just a couple of minor technical challenges, but we think we've got a great show for you today. We have two half-hour blocks because we have two people that have more than 14 minutes worth of stuff to say. So, Mike, why don't you introduce our first set of guests here?
Yeah, we have Ari Rubin, and an old friend that Ari I just met, but Larry Shattuck and I go back. No, gosh, I think to the last century, right, Larry?
Almost. Just been a while.
Right? So, and so Larry is involved with, it's pronounced Solder Tech, right?
That's correct.
Okay, make sure I got it right.
Yep.
And a couple weeks ago, Larry approached me and told me what you guys are up to at Solder. And they have a device that's kind of like an airport screener. Everybody's familiar with those. You walk in to make sure you don't have any weapons or metal or whatever. In their case, it looks at four different body functions, temperatures, things like that, respiration. And it doesn't touch you, but within 5 seconds, it can tell if you are likely to have the COVID-19 virus. Did I get that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It can be as low as 2 seconds if you're just testing for temperature. And if you want to include the multi-layer approach, which is recommended by the leading doctors and scientists to screen for up to, in best case, 99.9% of all people with known symptoms of the COVID virus, then you're going to want to have a layer that has temperature. By the way, a very accurate way of doing temperature, not heaven forbid, you don't want to use the thermal gun that you might find in a store for $50, because those can be off by 30% on accuracy. Mm-hmm. But if you have a very high accuracy way of measuring temperature, maybe plus or minus 0.01 degrees, which is what we're doing, plus blood oxidation level, plus heart rate, plus respiration, you know, you're good to go. Icing on the cake is if you could also include blood pressure. And in fact, if you think about it, that would emulate what you might experience when you go see your doctor during a typical physical check-in.
Okay.
So when was the symptom sense system, when was it developed and when was it released?
Larry, I don't want to hog this. You want to say?
Well, you know, it was developed beginning in January. That's when this iteration of the product came out, the offering anyway. We got together with about 200 medical professionals, doctors and clinicians and scientists, put a board together, a medical board, to basically review what was needed for COVID. To find out what was going on with it and so on, come up with some best practices and so on. And we came up with a device, but actually it kind of started back even before Solder, when members of our team were actually working on these scanners that Mike was talking about earlier, and lead developers on the scanners before they came out. So we started with that technology before the world changed in 9/11. And now we've come out with an iteration, actually, of that, and using it in today's world with the next bad threat that's come out with respect to COVID-19.
Just to dial that in a little bit more, Derek and I invented this device in February. In the first week of February, we sat down for lunch in Dallas. We were talking about the prior form factor, which is FlySense. We thought we'd add a special way of looking at temperature on a person or a group of people. but we weren't satisfied with the lensing that was available from a ceiling height. And so we put two and two together, and because of what Larry just said a moment ago about the experience with the airport scanners and some of the people we've worked with over the prior years who have experience with these airport scanners, we said, you know what, why don't we populate our electronics into that, and we can get a two for one. We can do metal detection, plus we could do health screening detection. Why not? So why not do two things at one? It makes a lot easier for the airports and for the hospitals and for the theaters and for the shopping malls and the schools and the offices, so that when people go through this scanner, we want them to have the same simple experience, essentially a go, no go. So if you see a green light, you'll say, I'm good, I can go through, just like you do with weapons at the airport today. But if you see a red light, in this case, it's going to be for the symptoms of COVID-19, and there's going to be a printout that's going to come right off the device. Plus, the data is going to go to the cloud, which is maintained by Microsoft. And I want to add that data is completely private. It doesn't show your face. It doesn't show who you are. It's completely anonymous. And even though that the CDC has relaxed a lot of these privacy laws in the last few months, we haven't relaxed those privacy laws. So we're in highest compliance with HIPAA and every kind of other act from Congress to make sure that people feel safe and confident that when they go through here, that their privacy won't be invaded. So this device was invented in February this year, and within a week and a half, we went into beta. And effectively, we compressed an 18-month development cycle, the kind where I used to see when I was with General Motors and when I was with Texas Instruments in the past. We compressed those typical 18-month development cycles down into about 3.5 months, and have produced this device, and we're shipping it Wednesday. Our first devices are being shipped to the NYPD. They'll be receiving the first three units.
And they're going to use those, what, for people going into precincts or things like that, or how are they going to use it?
And for two reasons, for two purposes. Thanks for the question. One purpose is what you just said. The second is they want to do evaluations. They want to see over a 30-day period, does this meet the criteria they've set, you know, whether it's with accuracy, whether it's with throughput. By the way, in throughput, we can do up to 1,000 people per hour per device. Plus, each of these devices has an 8-hour battery pack. So if for whatever reason the precinct or wherever they want to install it needs to move it somewhere else and doesn't have an electric outlet available, they can unplug it completely and they can operate it for 8 hours independently. And it's weatherproof, so it can operate outside. So it's quite agile. But back to the NYPD, what they really want to do is they want to make sure it works and satisfies the requirements. And then they're going to order an additional X hundred number of units. So X could be 100, it could be 200, it could be 300. We don't know the exact number. So I want to be very clear and go on record that they first have to make sure it meets their criteria. And if it does, then their team will tell us how many more they want to buy. We have a contract.
By the way, Ari, just mentioned, they just didn't decide that they were going to throw it in. I mean, there was like a team headed by their chief medical officer that came to our office, spent an afternoon with their equipment, validating that actually the sensors that were on board were actually recording properly.
Larry, it was more than him. It was a team of five.
Yeah.
It was doctors and scientists and, you know, purchasing specialists, but you're right.
Yep. So it wasn't we'll throw it in and see if it works. And right. By the way, that's not just for the first. I mean, we've got dozens, scores of customers now worldwide that are asking for this. And Ari, you can go into that because you're a little bit more than I am. You've got more up-to-date information, but.
We have governments and business entities inside the U.S., outside the U.S. These are iconic entities that some of which I can mention. I can mention that we'll be putting a device at Rockefeller Center, at Madison Square Garden, with some of the NFL teams, with some of the NBA teams, with some of the MLB teams. I'm not authorized to tell you which teams, but they are all over the country. with some of our government agencies, actually two government U.S. government agencies. I'm not authorized to say who, but you know them. And certainly with governments around the world in Europe and the Middle East. And just about 10 minutes ago, we received our authorization to submit an invoice and so process the purchase order for a major Japanese entity that's an old company that, believe it or not, in 2019 had revenues of more than $430 billion. This very important entity has issued us a purchase order, and a few minutes ago we were given permission to invoice. So we're global now. We have a global team, and but I have to tell you that each time someone asks for data, we say, you know, instead, why don't you send your smartest people and bring their equipment, and we'll invite them to our headquarters and let you do the testing yourself, because that's going to be faster. And that also will be completely under your control.
Right. So what is the form factor, fellas? What's the form factor of this thing? What does it physically look like?
If you want, I could show it to you on this call.
Share your screen if you would. Yeah.
It actually looks one of those when you step into the airport detector. It looks like that, man. Go ahead, Ari. If you got a picture.
You know what I'm having. All right, let me try. I've been having some technical issues here on my end. Let me try.
Okay.
Tell me if you can see this.
No.
It's all black.
Okay. So you're going to have to show it then, Larry. I was going to show you that if you go to symptomsense.com, you can see the form factor.
Okay.
So symptomsense, SymptomSense. And you can see the form factor on that site.
But essentially, if you walk through an airport metal detector, it looks like that. So my next question would be, I can't tell from the I went to your website and looked, how heavy is this thing? Is it easily transportable?
Yes. So if you look at the photo, you'll notice that we ship it with caster wheels that are swivel and self-locking, and it can roll into place. We ship it all over the world. We have a special way of packing it. It ships sideways. We can ship it assembled or disassembled into its three components. It has three major components, a left and a right side and a top. They screw together with a thumb bolt, so it assembles within minutes. And once you assemble it, you simply plug it in. So we've taken an Apple approach to industrial engineering. So if you look at the device, it's pleasing to look at in terms of design and colors. It's easy to use, intuitive. It requires minimal training. So the same people who are doing security at your building or at wherever, they'll look at a screen and it'll show the symptom result. And every time someone walks through it, it's the same experience you have as going through an airport screener.
One quick thing I want to mention here, Ari, real quick, is I want to stress that this was not developed in a vacuum. If you look at the board of directors that run the organization, they're pretty amazing. They're on our website. You can take a look at them. We'll get into them now. But one of them coming up is Lieutenant General P.K. Carlton. He's quite an interesting gentleman. I mean, he's former Surgeon General for the United States Air Force. He'll be joining us in just a few minutes here anyway as well. But we had a lot of input to this. It wasn't just thrown together in a room someplace. There was tremendous input from medical community and from our business side as well. I mean, looking at some of the folks that run on our board, the experience they had is really pretty impressive.
Let me give you a background. So I was asked to put together this board, my first choice was to ask the general. He and I have had a friendship for about 5 years. And, you know, with his esteemed role as earning a 3-star rank and also being a pilot and also being a medical doctor who was a Surgeon General for the Air Force, he had, 40,000 employees under his command. He reported to the chief of staff, and which reported to the President of the United States. So his decision authority, his responsibilities were quite humbling. And if you meet him, once you meet him today, you'll see a very well-informed, humble person. Similarly, we brought on cardiologists, emergency care doctors, other kinds of scientists. One example is local to Michigan is I used to work for General Motors for a number of years, and my former boss is one of their heads of engineering. It's Dr. Mike Karagoulis. So Dr. K, as people call him. If you go to the site and you see his background, he's an engineer's engineer, and all he wants to do is make things in high volume. So whereas Dr. Carlton or General Carlton's job is to make sure we get the science right, Dr. Karagoulis' role is to make sure we get the production right.
Well, that's a good segue. That would be my next question is, if you're getting this many orders, how quickly can you scale up your manufacturing?
So we're scaling right now to the rate of about 1,000 a month. And then we're scaling. Our next jump will be 5,000 a month. So right now we're producing inside around 100 a month this moment. But over the next 30 days, we're scaling to 1,000. And over the next 90 days, we're scaling to 5,000. And we're not doing it by ourselves. We're outsourcing.
As I was going to say, I think you're based in Dallas or near Dallas, right?
Well, I'm in Dallas. Larry's in Michigan. The company's headquartered in New York. We have offices in the Bay Area, Athens, Greece, London, England, Monaco, Luxembourg, Moscow, now Tokyo, Japan. And that's it for right this moment.
Be wary of China, you know. So
we're not touching China. You should know.
Yes.
Well, there's agreements that there's certain whether it's a TAA or other or NDAA. There are certain defense acts that although we're not a defense agency, we're obviously already selling to.
You're about to become a defense contractor.
Right, yeah. You got it.
We are very careful. We are very careful to make sure our components are sourced from approved suppliers. We know exactly the identity of the five particular companies that are on the forbidden list, and we do not source parts from them. And okay. I trust you. Please trust me that we pay attention to supply chain.
All right, let's bring in the general if he's standing by. Is he there, Dave? No? Well, let's keep going on. Maybe he'll join us shortly because we still have about 13 minutes left. So let's talk a little about price. I know that you told me the price, but I want you to tell the audience the price because I don't know whether – is the price proprietary now or not?
No, the MSRP is $35,000 per unit. And the way we do this is we want people to afford it. So we have different pricing models. So there's a direct price, and then there's also a rental price. So, for example, we've been approached by an entity representing the RNC and the DNC. They want our device at all the different rallies that are going on around the country. They asked us very late in the cycle this past Monday to be in Tulsa yesterday. It was too fast for us. We don't have enough units to supply that. So we had to decline that. But we're going to work to be at the others. And in that situation, it'll be a rental fee. So that fee is, of course, proprietary to that client. In other models, we've come up with a way for the football league and the baseball league and the soccer league and the cricket league and others to actually – from their own balance sheet, pay zero, but through an insurance company that we do business with, they'll buy the units from us and they'll provision those to the stadiums, and they'll recover that fee through a surcharge, through a COVID surcharge. So there's different pricing models that we work out, but our MSRP is $35,000 per unit.
All right. And I know the other thing you talked to me about, and I don't know yet whether that's been announced, is you have a relationship with a ticket vendor, because obviously the entertainment industry is completely shut down.
Right.
Can we talk about that?
Right. So let's say God forbid your family goes in to see an event. Let's say you've decided to go to a baseball game this summer. And I'm not sure that's going to happen because of how that's negotiating with the league. But let's say that it works out and maybe you know, August 1st, you finally get to go to a game. And let's say you're with five people, and four people go through our device, and the fifth person doesn't. He gets tagged out at a red. So because of our relationship that we've constructed with the insurance company and with the ticketing, with Ticketmaster and everything else, you'll have the option of getting an automatic refund right then. So you'll have zero cost for your ticket. Or your party can decide you want to split up, and four of you will go in, and the one person will stay behind. As soon as that decision is made, the ticket will go back into the pool. The thing is, if the person needs to be seen, we have a relationship with a on-site testing company that can do a 15-minute swab. And if it turns out they really are with COVID, then they need to be transported to an emergency room and taken care of. So we have those relationships worked out already.
Yeah, because your device, I believe, is what, 99% accurate, but still there's a chance you could...
Best case, it's 99.9%. Worst case, it's 94%. Worst case, 94%.
Right, but in theory, you could still report a false positive, right?
Yeah, that compares, if you only take temperature, you're going to capture at best, this is according to academic journals, 11% of people. So let's say that you're a fast food chain, and you see 30 across the world, you see 30 million people coming through every day from all your chains around the world, and you can say that across that chain, roughly 3 million or so people will be caught with symptoms, and the other, you know, 27 million will go through and infect other people. That's pretty scary.
Yes, absolutely. So, go ahead, Larry.
I was just going to say that, you know, when Ari was talking about the different types of temperature sensing, you know, most people, you kind of look at it today, what are most people thinking about? You're not even hearing about this kind of an option. You're not hearing about it because most of the world now is thinking about, you know, the thermal gun, just you point at your head, or cameras and things of that nature. That's all anybody knows right now. We've come up with something that's totally different than that, that includes three other ways of doing, you know, the symptoms to pick up, the three other vitals, that is. But most importantly, along with that, it's a different type of temperature sensing. It's not thermal imaging that you get from cameras or you get from other types of sensors. We're using a different kind of technology that gets us so much more close than you could possibly get with any of those others. By the way, those other units, you've got to be static temperature, static air, static humidity, and somebody who knows what's going on. So you couldn't possibly put it outside to do it effectively.
Larry, I'll tell you the specifics. If you use a thermal gun, you're going to be at best plus or minus 0.5 degrees. Mm-hmm. Fahrenheit. If you use a thermal camera, you're going to be at best plus or minus 4 degrees, according to the literature. If you use the symptom sense device with its patent pending tech, it's plus or minus 0.01 degrees. 0.01. Think about that. 0.01 versus
0.5.
Four.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole world of difference.
Tell me a little bit about why it's important to also check respiration rate and heart rate and blood oxygen along with the temperature and combining those.
Sure. I really wish General Carlton was online. I want you to ask that question to him. But from what I learned of him, if I heard him correctly, actually the most important parameter to measure is the percent oxygen in the blood. Because viruses, not just COVID-19, but viruses in general, they attack the function of the blood of the lung, and if the lung is not generating enough oxygen, that means the most important organ, which is the brain, will be malnourished. It'll start to shut down with certain functions. The same with the other organs in the body. So when you go to a doctor, you typically have a pulse oximeter slipped onto your index finger. It's using a certain type of tech to look, and you want above 92% and above is considered good. If most people are in the range of 98, 99% if everything is going good for their percent oxygen. But if it's below 92, there's something systemic going on. We don't know if it's chronic because of a disease like this, but we do know that something's compromising. And it could be because of, you know, sleep apnea, or it could be because of asthma. But we know that it's a trigger. We know that when someone raises that flag, you're below 92%, you ought to take something seriously and act. So that's the number one criteria. Number two is therefore not temperature. It's going to be respiration rate. Number three is heart rate. Number four, way down the line, is going to be temperature.
Let me add one thing that Ari, when you're looking at those four different variables there, those four different vitals, people come in and we hear all about the asymptomatic individual, where many, if not most, are asymptomatic. You are not going to get a temperature sense from those folks that are asymptomatic. That's kind of like the last thing that happens. What happens prior to that is, by the way, you won't see it as an individual if you have it, you're asymptomatic. You won't notice it until the doctor puts on these, you know, he goes and he measures for your heart rate, he measures for your temperature, which wouldn't be any different, but your respiration, and then you look at those things, then you'll know. So not even you know, or the doctor knows, until he starts taking those other three vitals. So we can keep those asymptomatic folks, many of them, prior to the point where they're going to be.
Oh, you froze there.
Oh, can you hear me okay?
Nope. Yeah, you're okay now.
We have one minute left. We have 1 minute left in this segment. So this is what we let you do, the shameless plug, so that if folks want to find out more information, you have to give your website address, phone number, email, whatever you want to use.
Larry, why don't you give them the website and phone number, and I'll just say that we'll make it somehow affordable to you, no matter who you are, whether you're a movie theater, a school, any kind of entity you have, we want to work with you.
We started out protecting kids in schools, and we really have a commitment to that. You can find us on symptomsense.com or soldertechnologies.com, but you could, SymptomSense is easy to remember. It'll get you there. SymptomSense.com. And my phone number is 616-318-2778. It's 318-2778.
Okay, Larry Shattuck, Ari Rubin from Solder Technology. We appreciate you being on the show today. And it made me sales yet in Michigan. I got to ask that question. Anybody?
We actually have one corporate customer that you would all know, but I can't release the name. I'm sorry. Ari, you know about it.
There's actually more than one. There's one that's doing manufacturing in your part of the state. And there's one that's doing manufacturing and more towards the Detroit area. And there may be a third one. And so we just have to be very careful to protect their
unless we ask, we're not going to let it out.
Well, we also have this large bowl about a half a mile from where I live where we put 110,000 people on football days. So I imagine that they would probably have some interest in that as well, because, of course, we don't know whether there's going to be a football season or not right now, right? Uh-huh.
My new friend, Mike, we will do anything possible so that you can watch a football game. You tell us the right person in their facilities group, and we'll work with them.
Ward Manuel, ZAD, go right to him. I'll make that connection. So
please do that.
Appreciate
it. Out of time on this segment. Appreciate you guys being on the show. We'll be right back. Matt?
Okay, we'll be back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast in just a minute. For right now, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching MITechNews.tv at PodcastDetroit.com.
Medical University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Here we go. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching another episode of the M Squared Tech Cast, MITechNews.tv. And we are about to let our favorite coronavirus expert, Fred Brown, become the journalist today. And he's going to do an interview, or at least be in charge of it. Mike and I'll probably pipe in with a few questions.
Yes.
But Fred, go ahead, take it away and introduce your guest.
I'd like to introduce Chris Madden. Founder Chris, welcome to the show. Chris has some great new thoughts about how to contact trace. And as you know, there's sort of the three W's and the four corners. The three W's are hand washing. So W1 is washing. Number two is watch how far away you are. So that's the distance part. And number three of the W's is to make sure that you do. Let's see. The hygiene part, we got the hygiene part, we got the hand washing part, and we've got the distance part. So we have to wash your hands. That's the third W. And we talk about four corners of a box, try to box the coronavirus in. One is tracing. First is testing. Second is tracing. The third is isolating. And the fourth is quarantining. And Chris has some great tools on how to box in coronavirus. So we wanted to kind of talk about how to box in coronavirus in the terms of testing, tracing, and then isolating and quarantining. So Chris, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the modeling that you're doing and some of the tools you have?
Sure. Thank you, Fred, for having me today. I appreciate the invite. Happy to discuss. Kind of what we're doing and my thoughts on contact tracing. We're evolving, right? We're evolving since this pandemic hit. We are absolutely evolving into the next phase, which is testing and recovery. Two phases, right?
Yes.
And so on the recovery side, there's a lot of misinterpretation, not enough education, and how do we do that, right? We've heard a lot of stories about how the government is hiring this army of contact tracers that ultimately will, call people up and, try to trace these people down that are ultimately testing positive. That's a good effort. I don't think it's quite effective. And so what we do is we have a new technology. It's actually an old technology. It's older. But we kind of pivoted and now apply it to contact tracing. So we initially created it for the opioid epidemic, and now we use it for tracing positively tested COVID-19 patients for people.
So let's talk a little bit about tracing, because it's really critical, and what's one of the areas where the U.S. Has a chance to learn from what some of the other countries are doing. And what we found so far, as I understand it, Chris, and correct me if I'm wrong, we've got kind of two big technologies. The first big technology we've got is basically GPS. We look where people are building, whether they're coming to the same building, whether they're congregating. And places like China and Taiwan are using a GPS-based system. And that has some limitations because you don't know what floor the person is on in a crowded environment, and you don't really know whether the people have gotten that close together, really. And then the second one is a little bit more of an advanced technology, which is token work. And basically, when your Bluetooth gets close enough to another phone within 6 feet, that you take a reading of that other person's token, and you know that you've been in contact within sufficient contact of that person at that particular point in time. And then you can kind of judge whether or not you're getting symptoms at the right period of time and whether you need to go get tested. And those are the two kind of big competing tests. And interestingly, Britain just decided to move to a less complicated one from a more complicated one, which is sort of an interesting decision. They were making two contact tracing at once. One was to do with a centralized version, and the other was to do with a decentralized version. What's interesting about your test is that it's more centralized, but it's designed to do things at a much more precise level, as I understand it, right?
It is correct. Let's just address the feasibility, right? So Basically, for contact tracing from a tech perspective, we integrate both GPS and Bluetooth. So we integrate GPS and near-field technology. And then let's go one step further. For it to be effective, you have to really have 60% or more opt-in, meaning user interface. And if you don't have that, it will not be effective. So our model, actually, what we've decided to do is we have embraced the enterprise model. So unlike, you know, government just pushing this out and hoping that, you know, 325 million people in the United States will actually use this, which I doubt. we have decided to deploy this on an enterprise level through a free market approach, which means that we are going after universities, we are targeting universities, hospital systems, you know, just general businesses as they come back, you know, to embrace their student population, their employees, their patient populations, you know, to really educate them as they come back to the workspace or the university. And that will actually result in about 100% user interface.
And, you know, I think that's a brilliant idea, because if you think about what happened, the government sort of said, okay, we're all going to shut down now. And actually what happened was, people already had shut down. By the time the government said, well, let's shut down, they'd already shut down. So that wasn't the issue. The issue was each individual wants to, you know, looks at his own risk, his or her own risk level, and says, I'm not going to do this activity anymore. What's nice about what you've done is work activities are about a third of what we do with our lives, for example, in the university setting, it's almost 24 hours a day what you do with, you're doing with your life. So what you've done is you sort of said, you know, you've taken that part of the of our life that says, this is a really important part of our lives, and it could be either the safest thing we do every day or the least safe thing we do every day with regard to coronavirus. This is one of the things that's going to make it one of the safest places to be with coronavirus, and that excites me.
Yeah, that I it's funny because, you know, if you Americans are very fickle, they love their liberty, right? So don't tell me what to do. However, if an employer says or a university says, listen, you need to embrace this to make money or come back to the university, then it's a risk reward element, right? It's really that easy.
And it's informed consent. You know what you're getting yourself into. You understand the risk. You understand the, and it's very capitalistic, which is very aligned with what we're doing. And if you look at what happened with Iowa, for example, Idaho, Utah tried to come out with a tracing system. I think 1% of the people in the state signed up for it. And of course, you only have 1%, you know, hitting 1%. That's 0.1% of a chance, 0.1% of a chance that you actually get a contact and a trace among the people who are using the system. So I think your system sounds really exciting from a terms of acceptability standpoint. Tell us a little bit about what it can do.
So it really focuses on two levels. The first level is really addressing an app and the user interface. So this part we actually created for the CDC. So it's very well tested and proven. And this is where we have the heat map, right? It's extremely educational, right? So you have a heat map of total COVID-19 cases. And we scraped that through Johns Hopkins and other public, entities. And then there's news feeds on it. And then it gets a little more juicy and fun where there's a chatbot element. And the chatbot element is really cool because that's where, again, if you sort of take the university scenario, you know, you have students that would ask basic questions. Hey, I'm going to be coming back in September. I'm from this area. I'm coming from this area. Could be a hotspot, right? What do I do to get into my dorm? Are we going to have football games? You know, all the basic questions. And so the beauty of that is, it frees up resources from the university side that people aren't on the phone, you know, talking to the kids all the time. You can just, it just automatically responds because of AI intervention.
Sounds like something that LTU might be interested in there. What do you think, Matt?
That's a possibility for sure. We have announced that we're going to bring students back for the fall semester. That's supposed to start August 24th, but the exact form of what that's going to take is still being worked on and depends on events between now and then, you know. So most of our classes are small anyway. We have a reputation for small class sizes, and, you know, keeping social distance in a class with 12 people is a heck of a lot easier than a 400-person lecture. So, you know.
Well, let's take that example, because, you know, maybe the students all want to get together at the bar after the class, you know, and kind of talk things through, and they don't, and so, you know, they're using your system, and what's the difference between today, where they walk into the bar and not really sure about the situation, versus when they're using that system, then they come out of the bar and LTU can kind of look at what's happened and give a sense of what the risks are that now have occurred. Can you tell us about the modeling?
Yeah, so I think it's again, it's about not knowing and knowing, right? You know, right now nobody knows, right? So and you want to alleviate that. So basically, what would happen is I'll just kind of take you through the process on some of the universities that we're currently working with. So Basically, what's happening is all the universities would require the students to have a baseline. The baseline would be that they have to be tested for COVID. If they test positive, then they quarantine 15 days. If they test negative, then they can come into the university per usual. But they must opt in on the app. Okay, yeah. That's key. Perfect. Once they opt in, then we know where they are. We know where they're coming from. It's not intrusive. It's all HIPAA requirements and everything else. There's nothing related to, and it's all security. So then they come to school and they're asking basic questions, but because of our AI technology, we're capturing all that data. Right. And that's really important as it relates to the administration and the leaders, because AI, we can then push information out based upon strategy, right? So we can see if there's a big influx of students coming from a hotspot, let's just say it's Detroit, right? They're going to MSU. We can identify, okay, we have 1,000 students coming this such day, coming to MSU. We need to put them in a specific dorm because they could be tested positive. Right? And so this all is effective with strategy. Yeah. And we have graphs that absolutely integrate AI and machine learning in the process. Then I'll go one step further, Fred. So basically what would happen is the university would conduct serial testing throughout the semester because they have to, because you could get, you know, positive. But ultimately the future would be we would integrate like sort of red and green dots with QR codes, go back to your point with near field technology, so that little Johnny, if he's got a red, he can't get into the fraternity party because there's a receiver, right? And he's got red. Whereas, you know, Sally can get in, right? Because she's got green. It's really that simple.
Yeah. So you're looking at all the different indicators and you're integrating those together and then looking at the individual and seeing what that behavior has been with those factors in the environment and then saying, yep, it looks like you've been pretty safe in the past 14 days, you've got a green signal, and then you've got a red signal. Say, you know, you better hold back and do take your classes remotely in the case of LTU, for example.
Yeah, and what's really good is you guys remember from when this first started out in New York. Remember the New Rochelle breakout,
right.
And they couldn't find the guy for 30 days, right? This can identify real fast, 24 to 48 hours. Heats, you know, really, really important hotspots, you know, where there's a breakout. And we can identify that and then track it.
And, you know, for the audience, they may not realize how much better the United States has gotten in testing. When we first, our first COVID patient was January 26th. And we know that. And then it took us all the way until about March 15th or so, almost 3 months, to test the first 20,000 people. Today, we do 20,000 every day,
yep.
And we'll do 40,000 every day by September. So you get a sense of just how powerful your technology like yours can be, Chris, when you have all the other sensitivities, all the other signals coming through, plus a viable test and a viable recent test. So I think we're getting there, but we're sure, you know, so but we need to accelerate. There's no doubt.
And it's funny. It's funny because the biggest challenge that we are facing right now, especially like you say, the university, right? The universities is that they're moving too slow. But you know what we tell them is, you know, don't worry about the civil liberties. That's not your biggest issue. Worry about the legal cases if somebody gets sick on your watch.
Yeah.
You know, if mom and dad are sending little Johnny off in to a safe environment and you're not providing that, you know, be very, very careful of that.
Yeah, you know, when you take
Let me interject. I guess you ran some scenarios. Fred gave you some scenarios, and if folks gather in a group as they are wont to do these days, what sort of impact that would have? Why don't we get into some of those? Yeah, I'm not sure if you have slides or graphics or what you have.
Yeah. So what we did was, so we took this data, basically, like I said, we scraped data from basic, you know, public databases like, you know, Johns Hopkins, which reports it every day, and we scrape it in its real-time data. And then from there, what we do is we do some overlapping based upon counties in Michigan. I did it for Michigan, guys. And so what we found was actually kind of amazing. So for example, we found that we did one with unemployment rate. So what we found, you know, in Wayne County, so Wayne County has the largest number of COVID-19 positive testing, right? But one of the other areas that was very high based upon unemployment rate was Genesee. And that was kind of amazing to me, but obviously it's not comparable to Wayne, but it had a very high level of COVID-19 patients associated with unemployment rate. We did, I'll go a little step further.
You can share your screen if you want.
Yeah.
So, well, you want me to share? You want me to share it?
Sure. Yes.
Your little green box on the bottom.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It says share screen.
I got it. Getting there.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is models start off being statistical, and eventually they become mechanistic, which means we move from a situation where you're a probable answer, a probabilistic answer, to one where you can say, you know, given this and this input, here's what the answer is. And models slowly evolve, and Chris is on the cutting edge here. We're getting to a point where we're getting some answers rather than just, well, statistically, you fall into this class. We're actually getting some, okay, you didn't have a mask, you were an LTU student, you attended these classes, you went to this bar, all of a sudden you start to get a much more precise kind of sense of what the level of risk is. If that makes sense, rather than just saying, well, you're part of this this cohort, yeah, it looks like you've got a 30% chance, plus or minus 10%.
Oh, yeah. You guys can see that?
Beautiful.
Yes.
Awesome. Okay, so basically, so this represents what we do is we, as I said, we currently scrape data based on Johns Hopkins and other public databases that report COVID-19 cases. And then it goes to states. And again, we have an app that offers users the same kind of information. And then what I did was we went back and then we went to specific counties. So obviously, like Wayne County is the, you can see here, most affected counties. Then it goes to Oakland and Macomb, right?
Yeah.
Then it, you know, just basic information, right? So I'm going to skip down to the good part. So for example, we have machine learning that integrates not only based upon testing, but also other algorithms so this one indicates that by August 2nd, we're going to have Michigan will have a very large increase in the number of cases. It's close to 100,000.
Well, up from 67,000 a day. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's interesting is it looks like we're kind of going slowly. What's nice about these models is that it actually starts to talk about, look at the exponential growth opportunities. When we look at R right now, our reproductive rate in Michigan was well below one the through May. But when we started to turn the corner and open things up, it's now well over one. And in fact, we're in danger of having a big outbreak in a few months.
And what's also important is that this this graph or this model does not only represent number of tests. That's easy, right? It's much more comprehensive, and it actually includes some of this information, which is median income, most affected areas, weather and humidity correlation, which is pretty amazing. If you look at the, incidence here and the incidence here, of course, Wayne County is one of the biggest. Related to other markets, it's pretty compelling. So this is what I was talking about before, the unemployment rate.
For people who are on the audience, Wayne is basically Detroit, Oakland's Detroit suburb, Macomb's Detroit suburb, Canada's Grand Rapids, you get Genesee is Flint, and so on. So you get a sense of where we are in the state. Kalamazoo is Kalamazoo. I'm sorry, keep going.
No, that's okay. So and Fred, I chime in because you're more familiar with the counties than I am. So I'm based in New York area. For example, here, Genesee, you can see the unemployment rate and then the most affected areas and correlating that, right? You're looking at almost 10% of unemployment with confirmed cases versus this, the correlation and the ratio is actually quite high. And that is compelling. So really, what does that mean? It means for government officials or our leaders that perhaps some of these things have a lot to do with the spread, right? So it's not only, being close to one another. Like we did one graph that was related to broadband. And if you think about, the issue of access to the internet, and access to education and information, broadband penetration and the correlation for most affected areas, there's a direct correlation to affected areas and lack of broadband.
Right? Yeah, of course, correlation and causation is not necessarily causation, but we're finding more and more is that when you add the AI components in, you're able to actually zoom in on individuals and enterprises. Then you can start to actually find the causation, and we are finding that, especially in rural communities and poor and minority communities, they're having a causation effect that we're starting to find with the feedback loops we're having.
Absolutely, and goes back to our, original conversation, right? For contact tracing, right? And if you want to make phone calls, that's great, but you need these tools. We can easily integrate these tools to complement overall contact tracing so that we are successful and that we are extremely knowledgeable in how we do this. And our leaders, the university presidents, the CEOs, as we go through this next phase of recovery and bring students and employees back and follow patient populations, because there will be spikes, how do we do this? How do we maintain the relationship? And that's really important. And I'll give an example, like in New York, I'm not going to name names, but we're dealing with a couple of hospital systems. Obviously, New York was hit hard. We had surgeons that because they couldn't practice, they couldn't do surgery, they were actually part of a contact tracing army on behalf of hospital systems. Just think about that. You have a surgeon that is making phone calls following up with a general patient that is basically saying, "Hey, how are you feeling?" It's absolutely underemployed,
Well, yeah. And, you know, in Michigan, we're trying to actually, Gretchen Whitmore has a, our governor has a program where we're trying to recruit volunteers. And we're trying to recruit 2,200 volunteers in Michigan. But when you get up to 100,000 cases, you can imagine each of those people who are confirmed cases are probably going to have contact with between 6 and 20 more people. All of a sudden, your contact tracing operations get completely overwhelmed, right? You just can't follow up that on that many, and you can't make good diary notes. And then at that point, really sadly, some of the value of contact tracing subsides. With the augmentation of machine learning and computers, we can really do a great job with it, even with a smaller number of people. So that's the exciting part. I think you're right, especially with the
we are generating enormous traction. Especially with hospital systems and universities, because we feel it's our duty to help. And so what we've decided to do is defer initial costs associated with this, with the actual deployment, because they shouldn't be worried about costs initially. We'll take that on. But at the end of the day, it's a freemium model, because we feel very strongly that this, you know, America needs to get back to work. America needs to get back to some sense of normalcy, and it must integrate, you know, sort of this AI integration to be very, very safe and effective.
So this is an inexpensive, relatively, and very quite accurate way of letting us open up with some knowledge. You know, so often it's just a ham-fisted approach is we're going to shut down the whole economy or open it all up. By going enterprise to enterprise, person to person, you're really getting down to the level that you need to open up, you know, wisely and inexpensively. I think it's great.
Let me leap in here. One of the things that we were discussing a few while back was whether or not the outside temperature had any impact on reducing the virus. And do we know that?
So do you guys see this graph?
Yes.
So weather and humidity correlation for most affected areas, right? So temperature and humidity, right? So look at Wayne. So the temperature was close to 80 degrees, right? Humidity is low again. So to answer your question, it does. and you know, one of the things that here's what we do know about medical protocol, and this needs, again, more research needs to be done. It's a very good question. Medical protocol right now, we have none. All we have is go quarantine for 15 days. That's it. So we don't know. We have no idea if, you know, weather or humidity has a dramatic effect on it, you know, definitively from a research perspective. We don't know if 15 days is good enough. We don't know if you're immune after 15 days or you're still, passing on the illness. We don't have any of this information. And unfortunate.
The biggest thing we're worried about in the fall, just so people understand about the weather, is that as things get cold, colder, people start to get back inside more. And that really is highly correlated with advanced progression of the disease. So that's why we're so worried about what's going to happen with the flu season.
Okay, we've only got about a minute left. So Chris, we do roll it. We give you half an hour this time, Fred.
I know, I'm overwhelmed. Well, it's a great job with that, Chris. I really appreciate the time. And these kind of tools and techniques, as people get more familiar with them, I think they become part of life. And you get more, and you get happier with integrating that part of life without really thinking about it. And eventually this will become part of life as we get better with this. And it's great that you're on the front end here.
Well, so if people want more information on this, Christopher, how do they get a hold of you or Fred?
So for me, they can. It's should I give my email? Should I just give?
Yeah, sure.
What that address?
Okay.
You are, you know.
Okay, so it's cm@gaventures. cm@gaventures.co. It's the best way.
And I'm fred.brown.covid @gmail.com.
Okay. All right. We want to thank both Fred and Christopher for a terrific segment and thank all of our guests today. It is 3:00, so it's time to wrap it up here. Until next Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern time, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching the M Squared TechCast, mitechnews.tv.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.